New Zealand's first Labour Prime Minister, Michael Joseph Savage, remains the most beloved of our leaders. State housing and social security were among his achievements after he won the 1935 election, historic 1935 election. But he was locked in mortal combat with Labour MP John A. Lee, whom Savage saw as too radical to be appointed to cabinet, even though he was very popular. And Savage could never show weakness or let his guard down. Hence, for his entire 4.5 years as Prime Minister, he avoided medical treatment for the colon cancer that finally killed him in 1940. Those years were a tremendously dramatic and turbulent time in New Zealand politics. Professor of Communication Design at Massey and political commentator Claire Robinson has written a play called The Lee Letter, which will have its first public reading during the Wellington Fringe Festival. Details on our webpage. She's with me now. Kia ora.
Kia ora, Kim.
The Lee Letter, it's called. What was the Lee Letter?
So, a few years into their first term of the Labour government, the first Labour government, John A. Lee, who was in the Labour caucus, but had been not put into cabinet by Savage in his first cabinet, was starting to get really pissed off. I guess.
Do you think
you should
have been?
Yeah. Well, I think there were two. There were really clearly two parts to the first Labour caucus. It was their very first time in government, so they didn't actually have any history of how to behave. They didn't know what they were really doing, as much as they were influenced by a set of policies, but they hadn't got a lot of rules about how they should interact in caucus. Lee was very outspoken. He was much more socialist. He really wanted the Labour cabinet to stick to their socialist principles, and he didn't feel they were. So he went out of caucus, and, well, he didn't. He wrote a letter to his caucus colleagues, but it was then leaked, complaining about what was going on.
Possibly by him.
Leaked by him.
Definitely by him?
Yes, absolutely. All right. And he subsequently admitted to it.
So he had the mark of the traitor on him.
Yes, yes. Yeah. But I think that Savage didn't put him into that first Labour cabinet because he didn't trust him. Lee was a lot younger than Savage. He was a lot more idealistic. And I think with Savage was cautious. He didn't want to go full steam ahead with a lot of what they had designed in their policies up till that point. And I think he felt that Lee was a bit of a loose cannon. But then Lee started writing these letters outside of caucus and leaking them to various left-wing newspapers. So the Lee Letter was one of the first, but it followed within quite a few after that.
Basically, the Lee Letter was criticising Walter Nash's handling of the finance portfolio.
Exactly. Right. So Nash was probably the most cautious of all the ministers in the first Labour cabinet. He really wanted to go slowly. He also wasn't particularly socialist. You know, he really, because he was British, and he still was quite happy to retain connections with British bankers, with the British government, whereas Lee wanted to sever the ties with Britain completely. Savage sat somewhere in the middle.
But in fact, pre-election, Savage had promised a lot of what Lee carried on espousing.
That's right. And I think that was one of the things that Lee objected to, was that up till the election. And, you know, we can tell this. This seems to happen with every government.
Yes, of course.
Every government says what it's going to do if it had unlimited resources. They get into government and they think, oh, actually, can't do all of this right now. And we really want to stay in power longer than 3 years. Lee was more of the view that you did everything as fast as possible. And, you know, if you didn't get in the next time round, well, so be it. But, you know, the other politicians were much more cautious.
And then along came Lee's article, Psychopathology in Politics, which was an extraordinary... I mean, you know, Longy versus Douglas springs to mind, doesn't it, right?
Yeah.
And it didn't name Savage, but it implied that he was the psycho being addressed.
Yes. Yes. And one of the interesting things is now that we know that Savage actually, for the entire time that he was in office, was suffering from and then dying from colon cancer. We can contextualise what happened at the time, but then people didn't know. You know, Lee, in his diaries, which were published from the 1960s onwards, talks a lot about Savage in caucus. He would shuffle. He was really volatile. He would sweat. He would be gripped in pain.
Anybody else give these accounts, or is it only Lee?
It's only Lee, but he did take, this is another extraordinary thing about Lee, which we don't get these days, is that he took copious diary notes of his time in caucus. Today, caucus, of all parties, is a pretty secretive meeting, and people rarely talk about what goes on in caucus. Mm. Lee did. He published afterwards. And his diaries are not very well written, so it's not like he made these things up. He was reporting. He was recording what he was seeing.
And what he was seeing was a man in desperate pain and on a lot of morphine.
Well, we can only assume that as well, because you know, we know now, with the benefit of hindsight, that people who are dying of colon cancer are in extreme pain.
But he would not have any surgery, which may or may not have fixed him, but he didn't have it anyway, because he couldn't bear not to be there, fending off Lee, but also putting in place his policies.
That's right. So he, there was a whole complex range of factors. So one of them was that he felt that Lee was more popular in caucus, and if something did happen to him, that caucus would vote Lee in to become the next prime minister over, you know, literally Savage's dead body. Was that going to happen? Right. He wanted Peter Fraser to be in position to take over. Secondly, he didn't think that anybody, because he was so popular with the people, he didn't think that anybody could really bring the people along with him on this ride to social security reform. And then as the years went on, Savage worked out that in order to be able to pay people the benefits that he thought that they needed, raise the poor, take them out of the poorhouse, which was his number one goal, the country still needed to rely on British loans. And Savage felt that if he was indisposed, then the British bankers, who they worked out they needed to rely on, would think that there was something wrong with the New Zealand economy and would stop lending the money that was then going into increased pensions and benefits. So all of those things put together meant that he kept putting off having the operation that he needed to save his life.
A major theme of the play is your suggestion that Savage was gay, in the closet, and gay. Is this literary license, or do you have evidence?
So, yes, it is a work of fiction. Let's start by saying that. But I genuinely think that if he was alive today, Savage would self-identify as being gay. He couldn't be gay in 1935 because under the Crimes Act, buggery was an illegal act, and he could be flogged or imprisoned or whatever. So simply not possible. But never married, never had any relationships.
Funny he never married, as
never
they
married
used to
at
say.
All. Never had any relationships with women. He was absolutely homosocial in the sense that all his
close... That we close, know of? Is it fair to say that we know of
we
no
do.
Relationships
yeah.
with women?
Yes. Well, in his biography, there was one friendship he had with a woman back in the late 1880s or 90s with an Australian, young Australian woman, but she was a friend rather than a relationship. So, no, all his close relationships, he spent all his time with a very close circle of men. He had a companion, Paddy Webb, who was... by all accounts, a philanderer. He was a ladies' man, but he accompanied Savage literally everywhere, especially over the last few years, and was with him at the moment he died. And the things that Webb has said subsequent to Savage's death suggest, in very coded language, that it was a much more close relationship than simply being a friend. Even Barry Gustafson, who wrote Savage's biography, said it was... close, but not. He said not in the homosexual type variety. But I think that there's a lot of evidence to suggest he probably was, but wasn't able to be at the time.
There was another person in his life called Alf French.
Alf French, yes.
And Alf was his landlord and his housemate and his caregiver.
Mm. So, interestingly, Savage arrived in New Zealand. Savage was Australian. This is a fact that a lot of people don't know. Arrived in New Zealand when he was about 35. Went to Auckland.
Paddy Webb was already here, wasn't he?
Paddy Webb was here. Paddy yeah. Webb had left Australia. They met each other in the gold mines in Australia. They were both unionists. Paddy Webb came out to New Zealand in 1907, went down to Denniston and worked in the coal mines and became big in the union movement there. Suggested that Savage come out to New Zealand because we had better working conditions and better union conditions, interestingly. Savage came out but thought South Island was a bit too cold, went to Auckland, started boarding with the couple, Alf and Elizabeth French, and their two children in Auckland. And for the next 32 years lived with this couple. They moved from, they must have been renting. He moved with them something like three times in Auckland. When he became an MP, he bought a house in Auckland. They moved in with him then. And when he became Prime Minister, they moved down to Wellington with him and lived with him again all the way up till the time he died.
On the issue of him being gay, you go so far as to say that John A. Lee's rejection of a sexual advance on Savage's part on election night, 1935, led to him not putting him in cabinet.
So this is really...
That's a bold step.
And it's a really interesting part of this whole process of playwriting. So nowhere in the literature, nowhere in the biography, nowhere in the articles and newspapers, nowhere in Lee's papers, nowhere in the biographies of Fraser or Nash, does anybody have any idea why Savage had such physical, emotional enmity to Lee? I mean, yes, he was younger, more radical, but nobody really can find out what it was. So I wrote the play with this being still a question mark. But then as it's been going through the review process, people have been saying, well, there's got to be something. And if there isn't something that you can find, you've almost got to put something in to make people think, oh, there was a catalyzing moment, whether it was Lee's rejection of him sexually. Who knows? We'll never, ever know. Lee had a very open marriage with his wife and had lots of relationships outside of his marriage, but he was very heterosexual in his description of his relationships. So who knows? That is very much fictional license, but really trying to find, to suggest that there must have been something that was extraordinary for Lee, for Savage to hate Lee so much.
If you're still in a position of taking feedback on the play, I don't object to that kind of catalytic that moment where Savage makes an approach to Lee and Lee rejects him. I do have difficulty with later on Savage saying, yes, it's true, yeah, I didn't let you into cabinet because you rejected me. I don't think he'd ever say that, even if it had happened.
No, and that was an interesting scene because that also, as far as we know, didn't happen, that type of scene at the end. But again, when you're trying to work out the arc of a play, you've got to complete certain circles. And so that was some sort of completion moment. But I'm really fascinated to see whether in the play reading, because the play reading is part of developing the script and getting feedback, whether people, like it or they don't like it. So I'm really fascinated that you didn't like it, because it wasn't my choice, but in the script development process, that's where we've come to.
You're finding this fascinating process, obviously.
Oh, loving it.
Yes.
Because obviously I'm not a playwright. I haven't been a playwright. I haven't written a play since I was 10 years old.
No. What was that play?
Well, the play when I was 10?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was something at primary school. Oh. I can't remember.
So does this herald a new career, perhaps?
Well, I have loved it so much. Stepping back, one of the reasons I wrote this play was because we are not very good at telling our own stories here. Political drama isn't something we do as a political culture, as a nation. We tend to defer to political stories out of the UK or out of America as if those stories are more scandalous or important than our own. So I've been really conscious that in our own local content making, we're good at dark, we're good at crime, we're good at comedy, but there's a gaping gap in the area of political drama. And we've got great political dramatic stories of our own to tell. So I thought, right, I'll try it. When I started researching Savage, I thought, this is such an interesting story. It could well lend itself to political drama. So I've enjoyed this one so much that my next project is to do, working on a mini-series, a script for TV around the 1951 waterfront dispute.
Uh-huh.
Also fascinating.
Yes, yes. Even more fascinating than this.
Yeah.
And calls for a larger cast.
A much larger cast.
And possibly more expensive set.
And a lot of money.
Yeah. That's right. But a mini-series, what, you're going to flog it to television?
Well, who knows? I mean, again, you know, I've got to my age, you know, ripe old age, and I don't want to just sit around waiting to do or not doing things because I've never done them before. So I've really enjoyed the process of writing the play, really enjoying the process of starting the script. Who knows where it'll go, but it is a great New Zealand story, and it's the 51 dispute is so interesting because of it was really the first moment that America interfered in domestic politics in New Zealand. And that's a story that deserves to be told because New Zealand's relationships with both Britain and America have been so important in defining who we are as a people, who we are as a political culture, our values and priorities.
Isn't it interesting? 1951, waterfront, lookout or strike.
Yeah.
What would you call it? Strike or lookout?
Dispute.
Did you call it a dispute?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, because the lookout, the strike, or it was a lookout, mm-hmm. So that was the fact. The government called it a strike.
Yes.
But actually the waterfront union didn't go on strike. They were locked out. So they called it a dispute.
Yes.
So it depends on, you know, which side you were. And that's the interesting thing
about that. Well, a dispute is the neutral. A lookout or a strike are the two polarities.
Yeah.
So you're taking the neutral.
The neutral. Right. Which, yeah. I mean, there were, that was a moment in New Zealand's history which was extremely polarising. In New Zealand, when you talk to people who remember or were alive in 1951, you were absolutely on one side or the other, and there was very little in the middle.
People may react quite strongly to this. Somebody has texted in to say, oh, you're happy to tell lies about a great man without a shred of evidence. Well, okay, what would you say to that?
Well, I would say, so what if he was gay?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's exactly
you
right.
Know, what? First of all, it is a work of fiction, I'll repeat that. Mm-hmm. But secondly, who cares? I mean, the man was great not because of his social or personal life. He was great because he led the first Labour government and they did some absolutely remarkable things that have stood the test of time and are really still the foundation of our welfare system today. They haven't been changed. And so yes, but I, of course, I recognise that people will be upset to think that he's gay. He has been sanctified possibly more than he would deserve, but part of that is because he died in office.
And he had such a sweet little face.
And he had a sweet
with
face.
His twinkling
and that,
eyes.
That portrait was so special and quite remarkable in terms of political portraits. But I think he hadn't been in office long enough. He'd only been in office just over 4 years, long enough for people to start disliking him. Mm. You know, in terms of the history of New Zealand prime ministers, Peter Fraser has been deemed to be of more significance than Savage. Mm. But you certainly don't get people idolising, outside of the Labour Party, idolising Fraser to the same extent as they idolise Savage.
Here's an interesting text. People's attitudes are full of nuance, right? It says, Savage is dead and his legacy is that people like my great-grandparents and my grandparents and my parents liked and worked with him in the Labour movement and revered his memory. So what if he was gay? He did much in the service of New Zealand. And his name does not deserve to be attacked by innuendo. I'm writing because my ancestors cannot. I think our correspondent here is trying to have it both ways. So what if he was gay is one thing. So where's the innuendo, which seems to imply that you're saying something really terrible about him.
Yeah.
When in fact it's a description of the times.
Yeah. I think one of the other interesting things about this type of feedback is, and it goes back to the comment I made about us not having much political drama, is
are disputing that, actually. People are pointing out that Mervyn Thompson, about whom we are due to speak in connection with that extraordinary 1984 episode, but Mervyn Thompson and the late Dean Parker.
Yep.
So short of political drama.
But it's not the sort of thing that you'll see on, 8 o'clock on Television One on a regular basis. We don't have mini series like The West Wing or In the Thick of It or Veep or, you know, occasionally they'll pop up in our culture, but then it's not part of the standard fare. But we don't like to look back. So we have these memories of these people. And the interesting thing about Savage, one biography, somebody like Abraham Lincoln, who died even earlier than Savage, 17,000 books written about him.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah. So if you go into Ford's Theatre in Washington, D.C., there's a three-story tower of books written about Lincoln. Because people like to just, go back and analyse and question and really try to work out who we are, where we come from. I dispute the fact that you can just have one memory of a person and that should then be it for the rest of our lives.
Mm. Somebody says, Savage is reputed to have had a child to his housekeeper.
Well, he had no housekeeper.
No.
So he lived with the...
Not Alf's wife, presumably.
Well, because they had two children of their own.
Well, that doesn't rule out Savage Parks.
No, it doesn't, but they didn't have any children subsequent to Savage boarding with them.
No. Renee, of course, also writes political drama.
Yes, she does. Great political drama.
When talking to somebody... I'm just interested in this response, because they're quite... When talking, says a listener, of somebody from the past or now, it needs to be fact.
Why?
I know. I would say why.
Yes.
I think we need, we need a declaration that it is a work of fiction.
Yes, which we've said a couple of times.
Many times.
Yes.
But I don't think that fact is necessarily able to be established, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't talk about anything.
And here's a great example. Hamilton, the world's most popular musical, written about one of the American history's most actually quite boring men.
I know. It's quite strange, isn't it?
Lin-Manuel Miranda took lots of liberties with Hamilton's life. There were, just as I have with Savage's life, there are parts of this, and in fact a lot of this play is verbatim. It comes from the written record, the diaries, the biography, the newspaper, and then I've padded it up in between. Mm. So there is a lot of fact. There are very many real-life events, but you are allowed to, as a playwright, as somebody doing a work of fiction, play with this. And the same, and nobody is sitting around complaining about Hamilton because it's made a lot of people a lot of money and a lot of entertainment.
Here's another one. This is like a giant play reading, right? Erica says, you're inventing motives and making Savage petty in his relationship with Lee. That's the problem, not his sexuality.
Oh, well, actually...
I mean, everybody can be petty. And if we think politicians, even great politicians like Michael Joseph Savage, can't be petty, then that's a serious mistake.
Well, I think she or he ought to go and see the play reading, because I do respect a great deal what Savage has done. But it's not just Lee who reports on Savage's inconsistencies when he's in caucus. Peter Fraser has also, it's written that Fraser has also commented on it too. So I think this is the interesting thing about caucuses, is that we don't know a lot about what goes on behind closed political doors. And that is one of the ways that political parties operate, because they should be able to operate in an area where people can be frank and free with each other, including disagreeing, because the general population doesn't want to know how much disagreement goes on without political parties. Otherwise, we'd feel a lot more insecure about things. But the interesting thing about this period in time was that it was catalogued by Lee. It was leaked a lot to the press. There is a lot in the newspaper articles about Lee constantly challenging Savage in caucus. So it did happen. It's just, again, when you are writing a work of fiction, you are allowed to...
Of course. And just to respond to people who say you're being disrespectful and diminishing to Savage, in many ways in your play, he comes over as saintly.
Yeah.
I mean, he is so committed to his program of reform.
Mm.
And that is part of the reason he won't get treated for the cancer that ultimately
completely
kills him.
And that, I mean, he was devoted to the poor. I mean, this is a man who really... Everything he did was about bringing people out of the poorhouse. He had a really tough upbringing himself in Australia. He was determined that he would not let other people suffer that same sort of existence. And so his first act upon becoming Prime Minister was a Christmas bonus for the poor. He was, you know, he really laid down his life in order to get benefits and pensions at a level that would enable people to be able to survive. And he did everything that under his leadership that the Labor Party did then really set New Zealand up for the much more wealthy 40s and 50s.
Somebody says perhaps he was asexual. They say, I think sometimes we are so reluctant to accept that people can have close life-saving non-sexual relationships that we feel the need to invent a sexuality for them, which is fair comment.
No, I think so too. I think he was, and I think that... But again, in terms of, you know, this word gay, it's people just automatically assume that that means you have to be bonking somebody and having sex. But actually, people can have gay relationships that are asexual, that are homosocial, that are close friendships. So I think people automatically just assume that when you use the word gay, there's a lot of rooting going on, which there is no evidence of that. I will be very clear, no evidence of rooting and tooting.
No. Very interesting. Thank you. Amazing period in New Zealand history. And, of course, I mean, maybe every period in New Zealand history has resonance to today, but this, of course, has resonance to today. How far do you go to honour the groundswell who put you in power, or to make sure that you're not frightening the horses and you win another term?
Yeah, exactly. That was the problem.
Nice to talk to you. Claire Robinson, whose play is called The Lee Letter, and it's going to be read, a public reading, which means it's not going to be presented, it's going to be read, so you can see the plumbing, as it were, during the Fringe Festival at Circa Theatre.